Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
We are not live. We're not live. If you're listening to this at our usual time, Sundays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, please know that we can't call in today because we have pre-recorded this show. Hi, everybody. I'm Rocky Benisher, and I want to welcome you all to Stage Right, the show that is seeking the conservative voice in theater. When I first started, I thought it would be more difficult to find, but you know what? I'm finding it more and more. And lately, in our latest arc, we've been talking about David Mamet, and that's a pretty good person to have on your side. But for the rest of you conservatives, will you get up off of that thing?
Get up off of that thing and stand to shoot, you better get up off.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, James. All right. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you that we are, as always, supported by our friends at Xander Business Group. They provide social media monitoring and online risk assessments for your child's online presence. Folks, the internet never forgets, and the things you hear every day, every week about pictures from the past, things that were deleted that can never be deleted, and all kinds of stuff that could be derogatory to your children, to your minors, not only while they're still children and vulnerable, but even as adults come back to haunt them. So remember that the internet never forgets. It's even more important for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety as well as online reputation. So you'll want to contact Xander Business Group. That's X-A-N-D-E-R, Xander with an X, Business Group, all one word. That's for the email address. Sorry, that's info@Xander Business Group. There it's all one word after the at symbol. info@XanderBusinessGroup.com. If you want to give them a call, 760-865-9614. And I'd also like to remind you that we are very much supported, and we support in turn the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. They are on Facebook. And I would urge you to check them out. And I'm very excited to report that one of their founders, perhaps their only founder, I don't know the full details, but one of their founders is going to be joining us in a few weeks when June rolls around to talk not necessarily about theater, but about conservative voices in fiction. And theater will fall under that umbrella. So we'd be welcoming her. We're lining up guests here left and right, and still working on getting one of the David Mamet scholars to talk about this conversion. Although I don't know if it was a conversion, really. Wasn't it just like an admission? Like, oh, for God's sakes, this is how I always felt. You know, I was a liberal too at one time, very, very early on in my life, and then I, like Mamet said to myself, I don't recognize my viewpoint in the things people are saying. And then I just said, okay, I'm done with this pretense that I might be a liberal, and I'm going to be what I truly am, which is a conservative. And that, by the way, is what many, many, if not the majority of Americans truly are. So why do conservative voices not get a lot of airtime? Why are conservative voices so threatening to others in the arts? And that, you know, that's a great segue, Rocky. Thank you very much. I thought it was pretty good myself. Thank you. Just a segue? My God, thank you. But I was wondering, saying this is a great segue into what we're going to talk about today. Is we're going to start to look at the response to David Mamet. We've got plenty more stuff to go on David Mamet. And hopefully, one day, and I make no promises because so far nothing's worked out, I'm trying to get in touch with Mr. Mamet and see if he would come on the show. And that would be very cool. But we do know that in 2008, when David Mamet came out with his article in The Village Voice, which is was entitled "Why I Am No Longer a Brain Dead Liberal." You know, this kind of set the theatrical world aflutter because, number one, it's mostly, if not solely, controlled by the left. And David Mamet, of course, is and probably still is, despite his admission, the greatest living American playwright. Imagine what the lefties in the theater world were saying. And Mamet, you know, is not only theater, but he's also an author of books, and he's also worked in the movies. So this guy's very well-rounded, one of the major figures, major American figures in the arts. Can you imagine how the left, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, own the arts, might have felt now they was not only losing one of their brethren, but they were losing the king. So now, right after Mamet, like 2 days after Mamet announced that he had converted, if you will, to conservatism, Michael Billington. This is 2 days after the Village Voice article came out in March of 2008. Michael Billington, writing for The Guardian, and he is the theater critic for The Guardian. I'll be honest, I don't know if he's still there. But in 2008, this guy had 3 decades under his belt. So we're not talking about a theatrical lightweight here. And he wrote an article in The Guardian saying, "David Mamet has swung to the right. How depressing." You can just hear the British saying that. How depressing. Rot. Anyway, he says, "I am depressed to read that David Mamet has swung to the right. In an essay for The Village Voice, Mamet claims he is no longer a, quote, brain-dead liberal, unquote, and increasingly espouses a free market philosophy and social conservatism." A free market philosophy. Oh, my God. What a blasphemous thing. If only they believed in religion, and that there could be blasphemy. Anyway, as a citizen, Mamet is free to do as he likes. This, I love pretense in these left-wingers when they write stuff like that. As a citizen, Mamet is free to do as he likes. I give him permission to do as he likes. He can do that as long as he's a citizen. What are the arts, a military unit? I mean, what, he's still not a citizen? An artist is not a citizen? How could you divorce the artist from his citizenry? It's just a silly thing to say. As a citizen, Mamet is free to do as he likes. Oh, thank you, Mr. Billington. If I were Mamet, I would have been on the phone thanking him. Oh, I'm so appreciative that you allow me to do what I want to do and say what I want to say. Thank you. Okay, back to this drivel, Michael Billington. He says, "What worries me is the effect on his talent of locking himself into a rigid ideological position." How about that? So if you're a conservative, you are in a rigid ideological position. And this not only infects your thinking, because, you know, conservatives don't think as well as liberals, but it also will impact your ability to write. What is the effect, Mr. Billington is asking, of David Mamet's immense talent now that he is, quote-unquote, locking himself into a rigid ideological position? And, you know, this is something we are going to explore as time goes on here on Stage Right, because we want to look at the question of, does Mamet's conversion, and I'm not comfortable with that word, but okay, for lack of a better word, does Mamet's conversion equal a change in the way he writes? I would argue right off the bat, no, for 2 reasons. Number one, Mamet has said himself, and I read the article from The Village Voice, that he realized that this was something he has felt for many, 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 many years, and he was only paying lip service. Lip He was only paying lip service to the left-wing cause. So Mamet's true beliefs have not changed, I don't think. So that's one reason. The other is the change, I think, and we will ultimately examine some of Mamet's post-conversion pieces, starting with the play November. But what has changed may not be Mamet's writing, but the response to him. That's what's changed. So now, people like Michael Billington, who would readily accept Mamet as the great American playwright, and in other articles over the years, Billington has said as much. Now, with Mamet occupying a place on the political spectrum that Mr. Billington finds ideological, and rigid, won't that change not Mr. Mamet's writing, but Mr. Billington's response to the writing? And I'm starting to do some research on this, but I will tell you, I think that what we're going to have as a result of Mamet's admission is a reevaluation of who he is as a writer. And this may even mean he will lose the stature of the greatest living American playwright, which would open the door to much less desirable talent, quote-unquote talent, like Tony Kushner. But, you know, it remains to be seen. Okay, let's go back to Michael Billington, who's depressed. Okay, Mamet's greatness as a dramatist has always depended on two things. One is his fantastic ear for everyday speech rhythms, in particular the four-letter bluster with which men mask their insecurities. Stopping here for a moment, I really don't see how that's going to change. But, okay. Mamet's other great quality is his ambivalence about the enterprise culture. In Glengarry Glen Ross, arguably his finest play, he depicts the way a group of salesmen are demeaned by a cruelly competitive capitalist ethic. At the same time, Mamet shows a wary admiration for these guys who, unlike the desk wallahs, have to venture out into the jungle of the hard sell. Given his newfound conservatism, I doubt he could ever write a play riddled with such moral ambiguity. I mean, I don't know where to start other than to say, and this is pedestrian, I give it, but, you know, this review here is pedestrian. It's BS, Mr. Billington. BS. The moral ambiguity of it's, of course, going to say what's going to happen is you're not going to see it anymore because you think he's in a rigid ideological belief system. A rigid ideological position, and you're not going to see the moral ambiguity. You're going to see only this conservative voice, which I'm going to argue has been there all along. Again, Oleana, where he was called a misogynist, and you know all conservatives are misogynists. By the way, we are going to have an actress on as soon as she gets back from South Africa, and she may be back already, so I'll contact her. But anyway, this actress is going to come on. She did the monologue of Oleana that we have played before, and we're going to talk about her response to David Mamet. And so keep staying tuned. We're getting a bigger audience, and we're getting better guests. Okay, so next, going back to Billington. Only last week I found myself defending Mamet from the charge leveled by the wife of an American playwright friend, that he was a misogynist. I conceded that Mamet wrote better about men than about women, but in a play like Speed the Plow, currently packing out the Old Vic, he creates a deliberately enigmatic heroine, who may be a Hollywood hustler or a genuine idealist. Even in Oleana, where a female student accuses a professor of sexual harassment, Mamet's real target is America's recourse to legalistic solutions to personal problems. Mamet, I suggested to my friend, is not anti-woman, only against political orthodoxy that sometimes drives them, along with men, into false positions. All right, stopping here again. So you see what Billington is saying is, only last week I found myself defending Mamet. So last week he was one of the good guys. I defended Mamet. I said he was not a misogynist. And now He's come out of the conservative closet. He's in a rigid ideological position. He will never write a play riddled with moral ambiguity. So therefore, hey, he must be a misogynist. You know why? You must be right. I'm not going to defend him anymore. Why? Because he's not on my side. And therefore, if he's not on my side, he must be wrong. And that's the kind of crap we hear from the left. All right. Let's go back to Mr. Billington, although it's, you know, I'm going to have to take some Tums after this. In short, I've always seen Mamet as an inordinately complex writer. Ah, that's the code. You ready? He was always complex, but now he's rigid and ideological, and all complexity goes out the window. Bourgeois. That's bourgeois. I said it on the air. George Carlin ever talk about bourgeois being one of those words you can't say? Anyway, bourgeois, Mr. Billington. The complexity will be there. It's just that you will refuse to see it. So who's in a rigid ideological position now? Huh? All right, take it easy. All right. I've always seen Mamet as an inordinately complex writer, one whose apparent tough guy, Hemingway-esque stamp, conceals a sensitivity to social and sexual issues. But when Mamet talks openly of his admiration for conservatives like Milton Friedman and Paul Johnson, I begin to worry that he may be painting himself into a corner. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this wonderful? The right is rigid, the left is. Hey, anything goes, as long as you're not a conservative. Already in his last but one play. Okay, I don't get that sentence at all, but maybe I don't speak, I'm American, I don't speak British. I don't speak English. Well, I killed that joke. Okay. Already in his last but one play, Romance, seen here in 2005, there were telltale signs of his talent going off the boil. Guaranteed. Nobody noticed this then. They noticed it 3 years later when Mamet said, hey, guess what? I'm a conservative. Then they said, oh, you know what? There's conservative leanings in there. Now we're going to find them. Before, we didn't see them. Uh-huh. And the precedents for a shift to the right on the part of creative talents artists are not exactly encouraging. Would anyone seriously argue that in Britain, Kingsley Amis and John Osborne became better writers as they endorsed right-wing views, and Noel Coward, though never exactly a lefty, seriously declined as a dramatist through his refusal to accept a labor-led Britain and the loss of the empire? Of course! But this just gives you an idea, folks, of the power of the critic, right? And the inordinate power they have. Because John Osborne, Kingsley Amis, Noel Coward, they declined as dramatists once they did anything that resembled conservative. It's not they who are changing. It is the critic. The critic is so offended, so depressed by the change from the good side to conservatism. Of course, to me, that is going from the dark side to the light, to the Jedi warrior, they are so enraged, so befuddled by this, how could anybody not think like me, that they feel that there must be a decline. And in so declining, in so announcing the reduction of the dramatist's power, they are reducing his lasting power as well. So the critic has this enormous position, enormous powerful position, to kind of control the destiny of these plays and these playwrights. But it's Mamet now we're talking, and he may be too far afield for the critics to have that much of an impact. But I'm going to tell you, they're going to try. Okay. I hope I'm wrong about Mamet, says Billington, and that he continues to astonish us. Well, you know, this is the setup for he's not going to, though, because he's a conservative. Okay. But his talent as a dramatist springs from his fascination with demonic speech and his own divided nature. He may pose as Macho Man, but he has always shown an incredible awareness of human fallibility. I just hope that, in leaning to the right, Mamet doesn't destroy the very qualities that have made him America's best living dramatist. Dramatist. Wow. Wow, boy, this guy was upset 2 days. April of 2008, so just within a month from David Mamet's admission. And the interviewer for the Village Voice is a Alexis Solosky. And this is in April of 2008, and Michael Billington is called A Man for All Theater Seasons. Boy, that's original. And The Voice chats with the UK's leading critic. Okay, so one of the questions that Mr. Solosky asks Michael Billington is, did you read the David Mamet screed that ran in The Voice recently, the one in which he says he'll no longer write plays like a brain-dead liberal? Now, did you hear the way the question was phrased? Raise your hands. Who out there knows what a screed is? A screed is tedious writing. So right away we have the bias of the interviewer. David Mamet didn't write an article, he wrote a screed. He wrote something tedious, annoying. Okay? In the Village Voice, you know. So they published it, didn't they? All right, and so Billington responded, I did read it. The first obvious thing to say is that David Mamet shows a fatal lack of understanding of his own talent. Isn't that great? Aren't you glad we have the Michael Billingtons of the world who are able to tell David Mamet he doesn't understand his own talent? We all need people like this to leave us alone is what we need. The idea that he ever wrote like a brain-dead liberal seems to me absolute nonsense. Well, that was the question. That was the question the guy posed, that he will no longer write plays like a brain-dead liberal. Mamet just basically says, I'm no longer a brain-dead liberal. He never said that he wrote plays like a liberal. And indeed, what's going to happen is people are going to now look at Mamet and say he never did. He never did embrace liberal ideology. Talk about rigid. Okay, so it's absolute nonsense. The fascination of David Mamet's work has always lain in the tension between his fascination with American masculinity and his deep sensitivity. It seems to me to social and political undercurrents in the political ambivalence of his work. It raises for me the big question, discussed in Britain a lot for the last 6 months, where are the right-wing plays? And you know what? We did have in the beginning of when we started this show, we did spend some time on Britain's response to the lack of conservative and quote-unquote, right-wing plays. So we at Stage Right have kind of addressed this issue a little bit. And he says, the feeling that the pace is set by the liberal left-wing consensus in Britain. I don't think there's any sort of censorship in Britain of right-wing plays. It's just that they're not much in evidence. No one seems to be writing them. Well, this show will prove, not in Britain, but in the US of A, that we are indeed writing them, but they're not getting produced unless we produce them ourselves, unless we have brave theatrical producers like Cara Bluen, who put on in 2012 the Republican Theater Festival in Philadelphia. Then we will be heard. I don't think there's any sort of censorship, he says. Yeah, not much. It's just they're not much in evidence. No one seems to be writing them. If they were, I think they would get a hearing. Uh-huh. Also, you could say that what we term right-wing values are espoused daily by the musical. And we're going to have to look at this at some point. What is meant by the musicals? The musicals are the right-wing values. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is that because musicals are probably the most commercial form of theater, are going to rake in the biggest bucks, are going to be more geared towards family entertainment, that because they are money-making machines, you see anything that Disney has put on stage, right? These are money-making machines. Then that must be quote-unquote conservative. Well, I think that's a lot of nonsense. And because I don't think that, first of all, I don't think theater in general is divorced from money-making, not legitimate theater anyway. So I think that's just craziness. But even so, I think there's plenty of left-wing nonsense to go around, even in the musicals. So conservative is always tied, apparently, to people like Mr. Billington as this embrace of the free market and profit, which is, of course, a terrible thing until he, as he cashes his large check every week. All right, in the time we have left, I'd like to pick up where I kind of left off last time, which was with Jonah Goldberg, who now in March of 2008 wrote a piece in the Jewish World Review called Mamet versus the Greek Chorus. And he says, David Mamet, considered by some to be the greatest living playwright, has proclaimed for all to hear, but few to listen, that he is no longer, quote, a brain-dead liberal. Mamet uses the phrase brain-dead liberal in quotation marks precisely because he was never actually brain-dead. Rather, he just told the relevant parts of his brain to play dead whenever inconvenient facts staged an assault on his cranial bunker. As a child of the 60s, he recently wrote a startling and lively essay for the Village Voice, which we read on this show, I accept it as an article of faith that government is corrupt, that business is exploitative, and that people are generally good at heart. But Mamet has changed his mind. The accretions left from wave after crashing wave of reality made it impossible for him to carry the load of his cognitive dissonance. For years, he called NPR National Palestinian Radio. He'd realized that while government may be incompetent, corporations at times myopic, and the military imperfect, seeing politics through the prism of a Thomas Nast cartoon, you know, where industrialists are cast as pigs in tuxedos feeding at the public trough, might not be as wise as, say, the Village Voice believes it is. Quote, I began reading not only the economics of Thomas Sowell, our greatest contemporary philosopher, but Milton Friedman, Paul Johnson, and Shelby Steele, and found that I agree with them. A free market understanding of the world meshes more perfectly with my experience than that idealistic vision I call liberalism. End quote. Mamet invokes John Maynard Keynes' response to criticism that he changed his mind. Quote, when the facts change, I change my opinion. What do you do, sir? Michael Billington, remember him? Michael Billington might have a different response. Quote, I am depressed to read that David Mamet has swung to the right, wrote the Guardian's theater critic of more than three decades. What worries me is the effect on his talent of locking himself into a rigid ideological position. This response is quite simply perfect, a Picasso of asininity, a Mona Lisa of moronic imbecility. Gotta love that. Mamet, a dashboard saint of angst-ridden cosmopolitan liberalism, has set out to read widely and carefully, exploring how his outdated political pose no longer tracks with reality or with his own understandings of the world. And Billington worries that Mamet is locking himself into a rigid ideological position? Mamet has, Houdini-like, gone through the painful process of regurgitating a key to the chained-up straitjacket in which he'd been trapped. And after the required internal dislocations has emerged, to think freely about the world, and this guy somehow thinks Mamet trapped himself? The playwright has explicitly rejected dime store Marxist categorical thinking, embracing instead the idea that whatever differences people bring to the stage of life based on their varied experiences, human nature is universal, at least to humans, and people are, well, people. Of course, some are evil, some are good, most a complicated mixture of the two. But simply because a person represents or works for the government or big business, or for that matter, fashionable minority X, Y, or Z, doesn't mean you know all you need to know about them. A business card is not a Rosetta Stone for deciphering a man's soul. Wow. All right, we will continue this because there's just a few more paragraphs, but we have run out of time pretty much. But next week, we will continue our discussion of the response to David Mamet. We'll start looking at David Mamet's work, and I will read a passage that I didn't get to today from David Mamet's book, which I think should be required reading for all dramatists who want to know what conservatism is about, and for conservative dramatists who who would like to hear the voice of the master, David Mamet, The Secret Knowledge from 2011. Its subtitle is On the Dismantling of American Culture. Boy, I can't speak. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Stage Right. And we'll be back next Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Remember, this show has been pre-recorded, but next week we'll be live. So to all a wonderful week, and we are now exiting Stage Right.